Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Ukrainian Football Podcast. I'm Adam from UkraFoot24, and we got a brilliant episode lined up for you today. Winter, well, we won't say it's officially over because it's really cold in Ukraine at the moment. But football is finally back after a long winter break. And as always, I've got fantastic guests and my wonderful co-host with me here tonight. First of all, as always, Andrew, Mr. Zorya Londonsk. Andrew, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. The UPL's back finally. We've got some football to talk about. We've had a lot of episodes, specials, but this is what it's all about, the stuff that happens on the pitch. So good to be back.
Really is. And as referred to recently, we've got some no-name Obolon fan. He is dressed, well, he's not even dressed in green today. He's lost all his identity, but he is still our king of North Kiev. Ray, how you doing? And try not to laugh through that.
Thanks, Adam. Hello, everyone. Good to be here again. Historically, early start of the UPL this year, and it's very promising indeed.
And of course, as we're back with football, we had to go to the top of the football analytical world today to get one of the stars of football, Canal Football 123. He's been at Shakhtar Donetsk for a number of years previously as well. Abraham Kampumar. Abraham, it's a real pleasure and honour to have you with us this evening. Thank you for joining us, and how are you there tonight?
Thank you. The pleasure's for me. Firstly, I want to excuse me for my English level, but I do all my best, like I say. So for me, it's a pleasure to be here. Really, it's a podcast that I'm listening the times that I can. So it's really interesting. I need to congratulate you for your work, for all that you make, and I want to be a part of this podcast. Thank you very much.
It's great. What a great night to record this. Obviously, the Ukrainian Football Awards took place today. Andrew's got a brief summary lined up for us on what's gone on today at the award ceremony.
Thanks, Adam. Yep. So it's been a busy night of awards, and I'll go through the big ones. There are a few sort of awards for futsal and stuff like that, but as we don't really cover that regularly, I don't think we're going to do that tonight. And we'd be it all night if that was the case. So we're going to start off with Young Player of the Year. So the nominees were Ilya Zabarny of Dynamo, Anatoly Trubin of Shakhtar, and Vitaly Mykolenko. And the winner was Ilya Zabarny. So big hopes on him. 18 years old, impressive. Let's see what comes out in the future for that. Best foreign-based Ukrainian coach. We had Yuri Vernadub, who was at Shakhtar Soryhorsk and is now at Sheriff Tiraspol. Roman Hrychorchuk, who took over from him at Shakhtar Soryhorsk and won the Belarus League as a result, and Serhii Rybrov at Ferencvaros. And hats off to Dima, obviously, our good friend. Serhii Rybrov swept that one up for obviously winning the league in Hungary and UCL qualification. Best foreign Ukrainian player was between Yarmolenko, Malinovsky, Zinchenko, Zubkov and Yaremchuk. I don't think there's any sort of real need to explain who they all play for, etc. And based off 2020, I guess probably was fair to give it to Ruslan Malinovsky, who won it. And, there are some arguments. Maybe Yaremchuk might have snuck in there, but that's for next year, I guess. Now to the UPL, the big three. Best foreign player. So the best foreigner who plies their trade in the Ukrainian Premier League. So that was between Manor Solomon, Shahab Zahedi and Tyson. And surprisingly, Tyson's picked this one up, which I think for a lot of people's like, I don't know, he had an okay 2020, but I mean, I would have probably given it to either Solomon or Zahati. I couldn't even make it up in terms of who to give it to, but one of those.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those. Manager of the year. Mm-hmm. Now, this one caused controversy because the nominees were Rabokon, obviously at Desna, Viktor Skripnik at Zorya, and Luchescu at Dynamo Kyiv, who was only obviously at Dynamo for half of 2020. Shakhtar did a tweet earlier last week saying, why didn't Castro get involved, seeing as he won the league and took them to a Europa League semi-final. But he wasn't nominated, and Viktor Skripnik won that award, I guess, for finishing third.
And saving Zorya.
Saving Zorya and maybe beating Leicester, which, who knows why.
And not going to Dnipro.
Yeah, I guess. It's a slightly baffling decision overall. I mean, that from those three nominees, it's probably difficult to pick someone outright as well. So
I think he would have been my third place out of those three, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. So, one of those, and the main award of the night,
drum roll.
The three nominees, Tyson, Viktor Tsakhankov, and Taras Stepanenko, up for Ukraine Player of the Year. So, Player of the Year that plays in Ukraine, I guess, 2020. Surprised Tyson was in this again. I don't know why, but the winner was Viktor Tsakhankov, one-man team, Dynamo Kyiv, pulling them out of the bag. Plenty of occasions last year, and even for Ukraine too. So, well deserved, I think, on that case. And yeah, that's my roundup.
Thanks for that, Andrew. It was obviously a great night as always there. But of course, we're here today to talk about football first and foremost. It was almost not football this weekend, but the boys braved it and got out there. They dug the snow off the pitches. They even waited in some cases for games to take place. But where else to start but with Dynamo? So, Andrew, what happened over there? Was it on Saturday night?
Yep, it looked bloody freezing. So I was happy that I was watching from my laptop. So all good regarding that one. Unfortunately, we're going to start off with a few transfers. So we're going to see exactly who everyone signed so far. So Talis Brenner has joined Olympic Donetsk. He's a Brazilian right winger. We've also got Tadeusz Nkeng, who's a new forward who's been brought in as a replacement for Zahadi, who has left, and Adam will be touching on him a bit later on. And also Vladislav Hameliuk, who has joined from Trondheim Moritz as a midfielder. And also the biggest news, I guess, for Olympic during the close season, Yaya Toure is a new assistant coach at the club. Been going viral over the past few weeks, but yeah, so that's a good sort of influence to have there. Dynamo, transfer-wise, well, nobody's come in. No surprises there. Giatitashvili has left for Vorskla. We'll be touching on him a bit later. Biloszewski, the new Sidorchuk, who knows? But he's joined the Desna on loan. And Shabanov and Rusin are expected to join Lechia Warsaw in the coming days. So let's get back onto the actual stuff that happened on the pitch. 3-1 win for Dynamo overall. Solid victory over the 90 minutes, but it was sort of took a while to get going, I guess. Surprisingly, Olympic took the lead. Nice little counter-attacking move. Lebedenko is really impressed there this season, driving down the left, playing in Nkeng, who laid it off for Alvarenga. He scored a nice goal past Bushchan, and that sort of kicked Dynamo into action. After that, it was more or less all Dynamo for most of the game. A lovely free kick from, I think, Depenna, from well outside the box. The Olympic keeper parried it straight to Besedin, and Besedin finished it for what was his first goal. on his first start since returning from his drugs ban that he was out for almost over a calendar year for. So, you know, Dinamo have been missing forwards, goal scoring ones. And I think the stat is that that was like the first goal a Dinamo centre forward has scored since September 2020. So, you know, that's quite a gap, but it looks like potentially, touch wood, that Besedin might be the new goal scoring forward that Dinamo have needed so far this season. Then Bielski missed an open goal, more or less, fired well over, could have put them ahead, and Besedin had a shot disallowed that went in the first half. But it was more or less same, more of the same in the second. Dinamo were dominating for most of the first 20 minutes, etc. Then Nkeng, lovely debut for him. He got sent off for a second yellow, a typical striker's challenge that sort of looked like it stung a bit in the cold temperatures. Straight, literally a minute after that, Dinamo went up the other side of the pitch. Lovely little layoff from Tankov. Don't know whether it was on purpose or not. And stunning finish, a looping volley from Bielski from just inside the area. And to top it all off, Besedin got a second goal, literally a carbon copy of the first. Tankov scored a shot, a free kick. Keeper made a mess of it, hit the post, bounced out, and Besedin headed home. So I guess there's already calls that Besedin's going to be in the Euro squad for Zbirna if he keeps this up. But I guess we'll need to see if he can do it more against top sides like the likes of Bruges are coming up rather than typical Olympics and the likes.
I just, while you were talking, it got me thinking about the interview we did with Diego recently, who said, you know, sort of Besedin is that, you know, he works well in the narrow spaces that they had in that a game like this against the Olympic Donetsk defence, and Supriaga's the boy who likes the ball out in front of him and plenty of space on the pitch to exploit. And this was the real sort of game with, you know, an ice cold pitch, freezing as hell, perfect for a player like Besedin. Now, it will be, like you say, we have heard all the rumours and we will see what he's like, you know, in particular the Shakhtar game, Bruges. This week will probably suit him more than the next week's game. I think when we go to Belgium next week, that will be a bigger test for someone like Besedin personally. Abraham, what was your take on the Dinamo game?
So for me, really, Dinamo need the first 30 minutes to adaptate the players to the field, to this winter time, and really Olympic Donetsk start the game as a really strong team, very organized, as a team that know how he want to play or to organize his attack from the creating zone. They really put the ball in the third in the last third of the pitch and make a good creating attacking game. But the problem from Olympic is that in the finishing, in the final, finishing zone, they have not really make dangerous to the danger to the defense of Dynamo. And Dynamo with time really adapted good to this field. They know how to play in these fields. And really after the goal of Olympic, play with strong pressure, very very organized and good strong pressure that pressing that in the second time we see like a really good possibility to beat the club Brugge in the Europa League. For me, this match really was a good training for this match of Europa League for Thursday. So, Besedin, like we say, really make a strong game in the most important for him, yes, to score goal, to be in the area, in the finishing area, to really anticipate all the defenders of the rival, yeah. Because if we go off the box, his work off the box, for me, is not good enough. Yes, he really lost many balls. He really cannot make continuity work for his team. He cannot really stop the game and wait his teammates. And in this phase of the game, I think that Besedin need to make more job. Really need to firstly understand the moment of the game, because this is his problem. Yes, in the box he's really good striker, he's a winter soldier, in winter games he's the best goal scorer of all the Ukrainian teams, but if he plays out of the box, for him is very difficult, because he do not understand this moment of the game. He don't understand if the play needs to be more quietly, if he need to put more speed in the game. And this is primarily the work that Mr. Luchescu need to make with him.
Yeah, very well said there. Ray, I'm gonna pick on you a little bit here, mate. Obviously, it was about minus 11 on Saturday evening, and talk is on Thursday as well of it being around minus 13, 14. I personally have never played in temperatures so cold. I know you have. Just for our listeners, what is it actually like trying to, you know, to play a competitive game of football in conditions like this?
Well, you have to make sure that you wear underpants and thermoclothes, first of all. And secondly, it's probably the fingers, your toes. The biggest toes, they could freeze if you don't have decent shoes on you. The snow gets inside of it, and your toes turn blue, and that's it. You cannot move, basically. You cannot shoot, you cannot run. Apart from that, you need to run a lot, obviously, and you have to, in order not to freeze. And it's really hard to perform any skill moves or any volleys. That's why I was really surprised by Bujalski's shot and so on. It's all about one-touch football and passing, and the team which provides it better wins. So I wouldn't even say it's more about air play, like crosses and long passes. It's really more about getting rid of the ball as fast as possible.
Thank you. I mean, I did a little bit of research before this, and I think I found the coldest game on record in the last decade was about minus 16 over in the USA for a North American Champions League quarterfinal played in Colorado recently. And I know the temperature isn't going to get lower than that. And it was minus 15 in Rosenberg for Rosenberg by Leverkusen. Back in 2010. So I don't think it's going to get as cold as that. I have heard a couple of rumours that Bruges may try and get the game cooled off, but I don't think the game will fall foul of cold weather. They're just going to have to man up. And I'm looking forward to hearing stories like Carlos Tevez and Mario Balotelli crying in the changing rooms when they came here in 2011 with Manchester City for the last 16 of the Europa League that year. And it is a big benefit for Dinamo. Predictions, boys, for Thursday night, what we expecting? Andrew, to you first.
I'm just going to put a bit of context ahead of Thursday's game before I give my prediction. Apparently, Bruges have had two positive COVID tests. So there's potential that the whole team might have to self-isolate depending on further testing. Obviously, we're recording this on a Monday night, so things are going to potentially change depending what happens over the coming days. But there's a threat that the game could be called off. But if the game goes ahead, it's difficult because I don't know what impact the winter break has fully had on Dynamo in terms of, I know Avram was saying that the game against Olympic was a good warm-up for them. But I mean, Club Brugge are a different level from Olympic with, to be, you know, to be respectful to Olympic. You know, they're top of the Belgian league by about 13 points of a game in hand. They didn't have their match this weekend, which I don't know the reason for, but it might be to do with those COVID tests. Who knows? So they had a little rest, but have been playing throughout the January and December. So they might be more sort of used to the flow of 90 minutes, etc. Maybe not in minus 13, as we've been saying. But yeah, I'm slightly worried about their forward line. Lang and Dost have been on fire recently. I don't think, for whatever reason, Dynamo are going to keep a clean sheet. I'm going to go for a draw in this first one, then it will be all to play for in Belgium.
Oi, oi, oi. Abraham.
Yeah, for me, so I agree with in some part that with Andrew that really Club Brugge is not Olympic in with his level. He's a team that are very, really very strong in the attacking football. They are very strong in speed transitions, yes, and this is maybe a problem with for the Dynamo, but the context is that after today's test we need to know how many players have this COVID, yes, positive test, and I think that maybe at Thursday we don't see this game, because my impression is that if the players with positive tests in Club Brugge are really important players, are really players that play every day, they only came to Kiev, and after this in Thursday, they cannot play if the temperature prognosis is minus 15. Yes. For today, the prognosis for Thursday is minus 17. So the situation is not very simple. So we'll need to see how it continue. But if we say about the game, I think that in this really winter, in this cold, Dynamo can get a positive result, maybe 2-1, 3-1. No? I'm agree with Andrew that Club Brugge make one goal minimum, but I think that the positive results will be for Dynamo Kyiv.
Mm-hmm. Ray, do you agree with him?
According to the news about COVID results in Bruges, I mean, revenge is a dish served cold. Who knows? Maybe it's coming up for the Swiss misunderstanding last year with our national team. We'll see how they pull off this situation. But I'm pretty sure the game will take place. And a lot of African players are playing for Bruges. And as I recall in memory, the snow is just a perfect catalyst for them. It's just a perfect motivation, just one more boost they need. So once they see the conditions, they will run twice as fast and play the ball twice as better. So I would say it's going to be fascinating, and Dynamo won't be an easy one for them.
Certainly won't be. Just going back to memories of 2011, and it's the last time I can remember conditions like this when football was taking place, and I think the cold will give Dynamo that boost for a 2-1, 2-0 victory, but I see the home leg victory and then a difficult game in Belgium next week personally. Now, whilst Dynamo were playing, we were expecting Shakhtar to be playing in Kovalivka. However, due to the unforeseen, unpredicted, or predicted in many case conditions, the game was delayed to Sunday lunchtime and relocated sort of 60 miles north to Kiev. And they played on the same pitch as Dynamo, not 12 hours later. Abraham, what did you make of Shakhtar's first game after the winter break?
So the Shakhtar, for me, they have the same problems as in the first half of the season, the problem with their runnings deep to the defense, to the line of the line defense of the rival. They really don't have, don't use the deep zones. They have the problems with this. Yes, it's really, they make a better work in the finishing zones. Yes, in the box. But for me, it's not enough to be this organized defense like Kolos make. After this, in attack, they are very predictable. This is a problem now for Shakhtar. Yes, for a good and organized team, Shakhtar now are very predictable opponent. Yes, really, they have individual talents. They have the better players that was playing in UPL, the Ukrainian Premier League. But if they don't change something, if they don't put a better pressing work, they don't put a better better and more speed in the third part of the field, they will be very difficult to be a champions and another year. For me, really, this is the most important work. Yes, I'm impressed seeing Konoplyanka playing right. Yes, because this for him is a new role, a new position. But I'm expect from him more job at the side. Yes, mm-hmm. He really plays like a second striker in this game. And like I say, they make predictable movements for the defense of Kolos. And Kolos impressed me and really seems like a Borussia Mönchengladbach teams, very quickly, very in speed transitions, team that don't give the possibility to Shakhtar to reorganize his defense and really was very aggressive.
Thanks for that. Andrew, I know you watched the game. Do you agree with Abraham there?
Yeah, I think this goes down to another bit in terms of what's wrong with Shakhtar is that the fact that they haven't made any signings over the past, I don't know, year or so, and there's just no strengthening in the team. You can see that Marais just isn't the same as he used to be. Marlos has sort of lost a bit of his pace, and you know, the fact that they're starting Konoplyanka, who has been so out of form, I guess, over the past couple of years, just sort of states that maybe they need literally some fresh blood in there somewhere. Still 2 weeks until the window closes. I don't think they're going to bring anyone in, to be honest. There'll probably be a revamp in the summer. But from how they played, I think they'll play better in the Europa League in midweek, personally, just because of they'll be playing against Maccabi Tel Aviv, and it will just be slightly more of a high-paced game, and they probably won't be playing against such a strongly, tightly organized defensive unit, which I think Shakhtar really struggle to play against when there's 10 players behind the ball. There's just literally no spaces for them to play in anywhere, and yeah, it really showed against Kolos. But fair play to Kostishin. They really sort of outdid Shakhtar in that match.
What do you think of Kolos's business this transfer window, by the way, Andrew? Oh, I've got you on.
Well, little update on Selezhnyov. He's not been included in the final match day squad for the UPL. As we mentioned a few weeks ago, he's been sort of removed from the team because of some gross misconduct earlier on during their training camp in Turkey. However, they've brought in a few players, Alvaro Enhamba, Chlobas from Desna as a forward, and also Belarus international Nikolai Zotov. So, you know, a few sort of tidy signings for the UPL, nothing amazing by any stretch, but I guess they'll have another sort of strong second half of the season. They played quite well in the first half. I guess it might be asking too much to actually challenge for that bronze medal, but they'll definitely be amongst, fifth and sixth.
Thank you. Ray, let's, if we look forward to Thursday against Maccabi, How do you see that game going? Do you see any troubles for Shakhtar there?
Not really. They have to be stay on full alert because this club is obviously a lower class team than Shakhtar. Let's be honest about it. But as we know, last year the first game of the season was Shakhtar Kolos, and they drew as well. And after that, they played in Champions League, and we all know how it ended. Eventually, they beaten Real Madrid in their own ground. So. This roller coaster is what Shakhtar games this season all about. It's not about transfers. It's not about the squad. It's definitely the coach and the mood, I would say, the morale of the players in one particular game. So if it's Europa League, they will be on full alert and they will show their best. That's my opinion.
Okay. Now, I was listening to you guys there, and again, I was thinking back to what Vitor said to us back last month about the Shakhtar philosophy, about, the ideology of the tiki-taka, and there's this sort of almost unwillingness to adapt to football. I shouldn't say unwillingness, but I have done now to adapt to this. Sort of counter-pressing approach that we're seeing more prevalent in football today. Do you see that as a big sort of hurdle for Shakhtar to overcome if they are going to take that next step? Abraham, what's your opinions on that?
So my opinions of to make the next step is, like I say, yes, like I said before, the playing need to be more different, more with more speed, yes, with more structure at the third part to make a better job in pressing. That I am talking with two days ago with Vito Severino, yes, with the assistant coach of Luis Castro, and he say that this is the next step that he want to make, yes, to organize better the pressing, to play better against the pressing of the opponent, because for today is the real problem in the European competitions. Yes, when his rival, when the opponent go with really high pressure, for Shakhtar it's a problem. It's a problem to go and pass to the second part of the field, to the creative zone. And this is the most important for today. But what is the difference so that can make Shakhtar better team? For me, it's the thing that with Fonseca, they really make good to work with the deep, to make their runs continuously, to search, to make more runs in the third part of the field with Tyson, that he want to make this in the previous Shakhtar. Now Tyson is playing like Messi in Barcelona. He goes very down to take the ball. It's a problem for, because in Barcelona there was only one Leo Messi. In Shakhtar was Tyson and Marcos. There are two. So, and it is a problem now for him today. But they need to make progression in this. This is my humility of opinion, and I think that this is this can give best results and can give the possibility to not only go to semifinal in Europe, but really try to win the Europa League.
Yeah, thanks for that, Andrew. I mean, let's keep it at the first stage here. Do you see any stumbling blocks with Maccabi?
I'd be surprised, and I guess if there was, it would be a risk to Castro's job.
Yeah, well said there. Before we dive into Zorya, of course, it would be rude of us not to first of all acknowledge what, in my opinion, was the biggest transfer story of the last month. As Andrew mentioned earlier, Mr. Zahidi's, his contract was running down at Olympic, so it was either a time for them to cash in or to run the risk of losing him for free at the end of his contract, which I believe was expiring in June. And Zorya, the team that was struggling to pay wages, struggling to pay everything, managed to find $300,000+ to get him to agree to come and join them for a few years. I personally was quite flabbergasted when the deal went through. I'm not quite sure where the club has got its money from, but we'll see what happens further down the line. His debut was expected this week against Desna, of course, battling there, the two teams for bronze medal, real close battle, expected as last year, the return match of the first leg where it finished 3-1. Way back, I can't believe how back the season began, but it was a lot sunnier that day in Chernihiv than it was in Zaporizhia this time. But before we start talking about the game, though, Zorya haven't made any other big name signings, but there's still the mention of Tim Hall, the old Karpaty defender, coming to join them, although nothing has been guaranteed so far, given his performances at Karpaty before he moved away from Ukraine. I am surprised that name's been linked. Desna, on the other hand, been a weird window for them. Obviously, Mudryk's loan was called back and he's gone back to Shakhtar. Interestingly, when you looked at the formation, they actually had four different people take Mudryk's left-wing role during the game on Saturday down in Zaporizhia, which shows there is a hole there that needs to be fixed. They did obviously get Vakula come on loan for a couple of weeks before Rybakin decided it wasn't for him and sent him back to Shakhtar. And Bilashevsky, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, going out from Dynamo Kiev on loan, made his professional debut, played the first hour of the game and had a reasonable game in central midfield, had a couple of pop shots from distance, nothing exceptional, nothing stand out, but also no huge errors in the game. Now, the game, sadly, for football lovers, was decided by mistakes all over the pitch. The first goal, obviously, for Zorya, came from a poor goal kick from Shoes, which was intercepted by Aladiar and they crossed in for Hladky to put into the net. It was one of those where, in better conditions, you wouldn't expect that to happen. Maybe Ray, he hadn't put on good socks and those feet of his were turning blue by the time he came to kick the ball. I joke, but only slightly. Now, Abraham, I was talking with the boys earlier today about the Desna goal because it had me in absolute hysterics. I think Skripnik would be having a heart attack if, when he looks back at the defending for the Desna goal, you had was it Vernidub going over to left back to track down Conor Konoplia, who'd overlapped, and Siganics had been pulled inside. And the entire defensive line was trapped in like the central third of the pitch. And you were thinking, oh my God. And then I looked across and Favarov dropped sort of 10 yards behind, sort of sweeping up and played everyone on the side. So when Konoplia's shot bounced back off the crossbar, Tatovsky had an empty net to head it in as Favarov had sort of fallen over and was lying in the goal at the time to make it 1-1. In the second half, another sliced clearance went out to Janinho. Now, he's not a new signing, but he is somebody I'd not heard of until this weekend. He put in a nice cross there. It was, and again, one of those great moments where you had Tam and Imarenkov looking at each other saying, you're supposed to mark him, no, you're supposed to mark him. Neither of them marked him. And he had a free header from inside the six-yard box and the game finished 2-1 to Zorya and, advantage them now in the chase for third place. a lot of chances for Desna. They had the majority of the game. It was one of those classic ones where Zari sort of sat, you know, allowed Desna to have the ball. A lot of pop shots from the edge of the area in particular. Goals, you know, goal chances. The shots were there. The expected goals were not there on that day. Now, before we move on, though, we do have to touch on the incident that did cause the headlines. There were quite rude racial insults heard on camera directed at the Zorya players. Now, it's not for us to really raise it, I feel. It's a disgusting thing that has no place in football. And we hope that it gets treated in the right way by the Federation. And as a few people have pointed out quite recently, you know, this is a global plague that hits the game all over the world, with people like Martial suffering in the EPL just this week as well from similar things. So let's hope we don't have incidents like this rearing its head in the future. As Andrew mentioned earlier, Yaya Toure has chosen to come back to his almost Ukrainian roots, where he started off many years ago with it. You know, fond memories of his time in the UPL and talking quite positively about it. And that's the sort of stories that, you know, we like Ukrainian football to be known for, not the sorts that came out of Zaporizhia on Saturday lunchtime. Crikey, it seems a long time ago now. Guys, before we move on, anyone got any comments on that game that they'd like to chuck in? Or if not, we'll jump straight on. I think we've got Rook. Oh, the mighty Rook. I know someone who's been champing at the bit to talk about them. And I know Vorskla's transfers have been exciting him as well. Andrew.
Yeah, so, you know, Rook Vorskla was quite a good game, to be honest, for you know, on paper. So a lot of good signings from both camps over the winter period. I'll just name a few. Sigurdsson, Ragnar Sigurdsson, joined from as a free agent, Iceland international with over 100 caps there. Karasiuk, central midfielder, joined from a Hungarian side. And Boryachuk, good old Shakhtar loanee who goes everywhere and anywhere over the past few years. Only Karasiuk debuted in this match. The other two weren't in the squad. I think Sigurdsson's got an injury. Not sure what Boryachuk, what's going on with him at the moment. Elsewhere for Vorskla, we've been talking about their transfers for a number of weeks during our specials. But I'll just do a quick roundup here. The most recent was Bradley Denoyer, who's joined as from Viterol in Romania. He's a Dutch left back. He didn't play a part on Sunday, but he should be good. Some high praise from a number of people on Twitter about him. Luizão returned for a permanent deal from Porto. And then the ones that we already know, Kajovi, Olivier Till, and Giotisashvili. The latter of the two made their debuts in this match. So on to the actual football. Rukh were trying to build on their win from Dnipro 1 in December. They made a good start. They forced a few good saves from Riznik. It looked end-to-end stuff this match, to be honest. Pretty high-paced, high intensity for the weather. So quite impressed by that. Riznik, good performance from him. But ultimately, it was a sort of a poor challenge from Alun. For the penalty. Typical foul. Klimchuk converted, and that was sort of 1-0 at the break. Vorskla, you know, they tried to come back into it, and it was a sort of a textbook Giotisashvili goal. Lovely sort of pass into him just at the edge of the box. He took it past about two or three defenders and finished high into the net, past the keeper at his near post. Sort of something similar to what you'd expect him to score from, you know, his time at Dinamo that just hasn't really come about. So that was sort of exciting to see that finally he's given his chance and, you know, on his debut, he gets the goal. So plenty more to see from what that happens. And I mean, with the rumours of Tsarnkov leaving soon, maybe he might be the guy to come in to Dinamo once Tsarnkov leaves. Another player who was quite impressive, more from the Vorskla front, was Kane, as usual. Very influential in the side, you know, taking shots, dribbling, nice few skill moves as well. Didn't get sent off this game, so that's always a positive from his point of view. And Kulac was back from injury after a long set off towards the end of last year. He had a few nice shots, but, you know, couldn't get past the keeper. And, you know, ultimately Till was here and there. I think he's got a bit of adaptation to do, but he looks like a sort of astute signing as well. And just, you know, to round off the nice Vorskla news, it comes freshly that Najib Yakubu, their fullback, is very open to be playing for the Ukrainian national team. He's opened the door for himself, says that after being in Ukraine for 2 years, it's like his second home. And if the opportunity arose, he'll be happily be the first black player to play for Ukraine.
Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing after what we just said happened in Zaporizhia last week? Before we move on, apologies, Desna fans. I forgot to mention Mr. Dima, who was joined from Romania. Didn't make his debut, could not ready yet, but hopefully we'll see him first. Apologies there. It did slip me, but I didn't mean to mention it. Ray. You had the joys of my friend Isaac's favourite team, Ingolets. How was it for you?
That's right, Adam. I hope your friend is not too disappointed with the result of the game. As the headlines before it said, everything comes from the head. The words of Dnipro 1 captain Loginov, who recently played 100 matches for Dnipro and was picked as a captain, saying about the psychological side of his team, the bottom of the table before the comeback of UPL this winter. Now, obviously, as they defeated Ingolets 2-0, they've took off the bottom of the table, and now they have 11 points, still staying in the relegation zone, but everything came from the head of Douglas in the first goal. Good header, an obvious mistake by the goalkeeper and the Ingolets defense. After that, Dovbik, as a target man and a bulky type of forward, he decided to take a free kick. When I saw the highlights, I could not figure out where was he aiming, where was he shooting. He shot in the keeper's corner, and his luck was there because Kucherenko, the center midfielder of Ingolets, got in the way of the ball, and the ball ricocheted into the net. 2-0 for Dnipro 1, two controversial goals. To be fair, transfers for Dnipro team are the two Brazilians, Wagner, a two-year deal. Bill Ferreira on loan, and Mario Čužev, a Croatian midfielder, same nationality as the Dnipro 1 coach, Jovicevic. He knew him before by Dinamo Zagreb. Says he's a promising lad who's going to pick on his game in future games. And Zaurim Haradze, goalkeeper, a long-time goalkeeper of Olympic, joined Dnipro 1 as well. So it's making a good battle for number one position in this team. Before the match, Jovicevic also mentioned that you can spend 300 million on transfers like Chelsea and get nothing. That's why we picked the players we needed and the ones I just mentioned. Hopefully he's right. I mean, this guy. Also, it's important to mention that Kravchenko, the longtime captain of Dnipro, has retired into Chernomorets Odessa. in Persha Liga. He is going to help them to promote in the end of, during the rest of the season. There was a brutal send-off for Ingulets. The Plohotniuk, the midfielder, quite an aggressive player who got sent off in the end of the game, quite brutally falling on Douglas, the defender, sliding in. Not a good one. So overall, there was an all-of-nothing match for 6 points and third victory of the season for only the third victory of the season for Dnipro 1 resulted in them taking off the bottom of the table. Therefore, now we have 12 points for Lviv, 11 for Dnipro 1, 11 for Ingulets, 10 for Ruch and 10 for Minai. That's how the last five teams are lined up in the table of UPL.
As always, it's going to be an incredibly tight battle down there this season. It's going to be as exciting, I think, as the race for the top. Now, I stepped up and I did my favourite Ocharelka watch.
Emmanuel Petit. Emmanuel Petit.
Exactly. He must be his young boy. I've never seen anyone as young. He's 17-year-old stuck in a 30-year-old's body when you watch him play. He stands out head and shoulders above everyone else on the pitch. Sadly, he didn't have such a good game this week. I can only assume the pitch was frozen in Mariupol and that's why it was moved up to Zaporizhia. And it's amazing what 24 hours can make to... Go on.
Yeah, I know. I just don't think the stadium's ready yet from the renovations that they've had since last year. I think we still got another few weeks and then hopefully we'll see football return to Mariupol.
I did wonder. Can't wait for it. Can't wait for it. Now, it was amazing, though, the change in 24 hours from the Zorya game to the Mariupol game. It's like all the snow had gone. I assume it had just been shoveled out of the way. Alexandria started off the game quite brightly. I thought Lukievich, I hope I pronounced his name right, had a great chance on the cutting in from the right wing. Go on, Andrew, correct me. I know you want to.
Lukievich.
Yeah, that was it. It's my handwriting. It is my handwriting. You can't read it at all. Cutting nicely on the right-hand side there and had a tidy chance early on there, I thought. And then the goal. So hands up, really good finish by Sitalo into the far corner there from the edge of the area. I was reading the Alexandria website just before we came on air. It said they caught the goalkeeper by surprise. I thought they also caught the Mariupol defence by surprise because Bikov was played them all onside. I'm not quite sure what the tactic was there for him to sit a few yards deeper. But when Sitalo made the run, the other defence stood still and let him run through completely unmarked. And of course, he was onside because Bikov was a little bit deeper. Now, it was either he'd switched off and dropped deep or something went drastically wrong there. And obviously, then he was clean free for his shot from distance. Bilic. He struggled a little bit in the conditions, didn't he? There were a few bad miss kicks by him, especially during the first half. He was lucky to get away with a couple of those. And I think, Abraham, as you said earlier with Dinamo, I think Mariupol took probably about 45 minutes to shake off the winter blues and get back into professional attitude on the pitch. In the second half, they were a lot better. What's his name? Tankovsky. Went very close with a free kick towards the end of the game. Bilic, it was a good save. Probably should have done better with it, but he did save it, and it was a good effort. Really was. Before we move into a discussion about the V man, I have to talk about the S man, Danny Sikam, who once again missed the gilt edge chance. I really worry for him. He's a boy, obviously, with potential. He's had a great young career. And this is the age in a young player's career where you either step up or you drift away. And when you see him going clean through like that, you're just thinking, please put it in the back of the net. And he put it straight at the keeper and of course saved and game finishes 1-0 to Alexandria. Not sure what's going to happen there. Really not. Hopefully he'll hit a bit of form, but we have to, it'd be just be wrong of me not to mention it. It's our job, and good luck, Danny, for the rest of the season. I hope you bag a hatful, or hat a bagful, whichever way around it's got to be. Transfer wise, as always with Mariupol, there's an assortment of people coming from Shakhtar for another loan period. Probably the most interesting is Manpassi. Certainly the most interesting for me, the young central defender. But hopefully we'll see him get some game time. Was on the bench, didn't come on, but hopefully we'll see him play reasonably soon. Who else was there? Drambayev came on towards the end as well. I know he's come down from Shakhtar as well. Melichenko played earlier in the game and came off half-time during what was quite a poor first half for them. Alexandria, only Kalushny, I hope I pronounced his name right, the boy they've signed from Dynamo Kiev, appeared. The two lads, they've got him from the Latvian league, were nowhere near the matchday squad. So I can only assume, again, they're not quite ready to play for Alexandria. Now, Vakula. Obviously, 12 months ago, we go back to last season, he was sent down to Shakhtar. He was playing, he's a Shakhtar boy, Shakhtar contracted player, was sent to Mariupol on loan last season. They played him up front, didn't score. If anyone who's watched him can tell he's not a striker and never will be. Then he went back to Shakhtar second half last season, made some appearances in the first team as a right back, and struggled a little bit with his defending, given he'd been playing up front earlier in the season, and then had quite a serious injury and was going to be sent out to Desna for this half the season. I personally don't know what went on, but there is, again, as with Selesnyov earlier, as sort of, breaches of unprofessionalism, shall we say, saw his contract there and his loan agreement terminated within a couple of weeks. And then he was sent to Mariupol. We're still not 100% certain. I ask Andrew to fill in the gaps in a second, whether the loan agreement had been signed or not. But just last week, he crashed his car whilst intoxicated. And definitely, Mariupol have now said he is no longer associated with that club and has been sent back to Shakhtar, back to Kiev, with his tail between his legs. His contract, I believe, is for, if it's not this year, will expire next year. I don't know what will happen to him next. Andrew, did I miss anything in the sorry tale of Vlad Vakula?
No, covered pretty well. Maybe just to add to that, it was the supposed story was Vakula was returning from the Mariupol VP birthday party. He hit a road sign. I don't think it was like a massive crash or anything like that. So luckily no one was hurt. Seriously. And yeah, it was apparently the day, like it was in the early hours of the day he was meant to have his medical with the club and sign the official papers. So yeah, that didn't happen.
Now, Abraham, I know you've been involved with Shakhtar in the past. Now, when I've talked to people involved with Shakhtar, everyone has spoken very highly of Vakula and said what a good character he is. Is that something you've seen as well?
So I know is that I know from Vakula, he is a good guy. He's not in Shakhtar. He's not making noise. He's not making nothing of problems, really. With he's a very professional guy. But like I know, in this winter was happened something with him in the personal life that really that really now we see all the consequences. Yes, that he's a young guy and don't can to control this situation in personal life, and there is the problem we see in his professional life. But it's one thing for me from Bakula. Bakula is a talent player. Yes, he's young player, and not so young. He has he have 22, 23 years. Mm-hmm. Yes, but for me, he's not a player for Shakhtar Donetsk. Not he's not this type of winger that used the club of Donetsk. He need more space. This is just why in the first team he play more like a right back than a right wing. Yes, but in team like Desna, for me this team was pretty good for him. But he lost his opportunity, and I don't know if he can take more opportunities to show us his talent, his quality in UPL. Because if his club like Mariupol don't give him this chance, I don't know what is happening now with him. Because in Shakhtar, really in the first team, he don't want to see him in first team now. There was Mudrik return, yes, and there is no space. Simply, mm-hmm. It's not space for him. And in the under 21 championship, I think for Bakula, there is not. It's so interested to play in this championship.
Agree, very well said there. Our final game of the weekend saw our good friends Minai and the return of Mr. Malevsky take on Lviv. Ray, how did our Zhenya and Tony's team get on?
The fall of Artem Milevsky, as the headlines would have said about this game, the decisive fall which helped Minai score the only goal in this game, not the winning goal, to be honest. Let's start with transfers first. Renan and Alvaro, the Brazilians, are back in FC Lviv. Who would have expected any extravaganza from them? But yet again, the very first game, two assists from Renan, two goals by Alvaro. There it is, the newcomers. Steal all the show. Also, they signed Ivan Brickner, who was an Olympic player who actually made an impact to this game as well, providing some aggression and, you know, thirst for play, I would say, a real hunger for the ball in some episodes. And Minai obviously signed Temelevsky and the Nigerian guy called Ugo. There's a long name. I wouldn't take any chances to pronounce it. I would call him Ugo, as official Instagram account of Minai actually called him. So, yeah, let's be fair there. Schinder scored for Minai after Milevski fell down and made an open opportunity for Schinder to just to nick the ball in, just a tap in, basically. So, tactics-wise, Milevski started as number 10 as a center forward. In FC Lviv, Alvaro played a defensive midfielder, and Renan played a center forward. So we are dealing with a false nine over here. And all credit to Shumsky, the entrenador of FC Lviv, who decided to play them that way. And Alvaro resulted in two goals from the defensive midfielder position, which is quite promising for them. And no snow and no frosty, frozen weather made any impact on those Brazilian guys. As I told you before, they are hungry for it. They run twice as fast. So when the grass turns green again, we're going to see more show from them. A couple of more words for Milevski. Obviously, we all need to know how he debuted, how was his comeback, and tactics enter the scene when we know that the XA, the expected assists from Milevski, were the highest in Minai. 0.21. Probably this fall actually took the most part of it. 72% of successful actions and 90% of successful passes. The night is young.
It really is. It really is. Thank you, Ray. As always, you bring a smile to our face. Andrew, I see you're ready to pounce.
Yeah, no, I've just got a bit of extra news to add for Minai. Their star striker, Nuriev, is likely to become a Azerbaijan international very soon. He's got an Azerbaijan mother, I believe. So, mother, I believe, or father, I don't know exactly, but he's got some Azerbaijani parenthood, and it means he qualifies. And he says that because he's unlikely to get a chance for Ukraine, this is sort of a logical step.
And before we go, everyone, just a brief update from Andrew on the Kaz hearing as took place this week. Andrew, over to you.
Yeah, so the official Kaz hearing took place in Lausanne, and UAF representatives took part in it. Took over about 5 hours, apparently, alongside Andriy Pavelko, the president of the Ukrainian Association of Football, his secretary general, Yuri Zapisotsky, a load of lawyers, and I think even Andriy Shevchenko took part in some manner as well, all over Zoom, I think. And yeah, ultimately, Zapisotsky gave a comment on the UAF website saying that it's all taken place. All three parties have given their sort of views. We believe we're right in our arguments. And now we wait for the final decision, which apparently could take another few weeks. It's not actually determined when the decision will come through. So I guess we'll find out shortly.
We can only wait, and promise everyone, as soon as we hear anything here on the podcast, we'll let you know as well. So that's it for today, everyone. It's been a busy start to our footballing adventures in 2021. We enjoyed the winter break, but we're a lot happier when there's some real football to talk about. Now, Abraham, it's been great to have you with us tonight. We've really enjoyed it, and we've really appreciated your expert insight into Dynamo and Shakhtar in particular. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for us. Really, it's for me, it's a good time to be with you, really, to talk about this Ukrainian championship that is not so... it's not so strange like a top European leagues, but really, with time we take this championship to another level. I don't think that we was in the level of 2010, 2011, but the progression is good. So and these players like Milevski, for me is a good chance to make. Really more quality this championship, because yes, really he's don't make a super debut, but for me he showed that his football IQ is in another level with his teammates. This is a problem. Yes, he think faster, and really there will the connection they need to train. Yes, and this Milevski, the transfer window of Vorskla, Poltava and other teams, like we say, really give a good chance to progress and go up. Thank you very much for all the invitation.
It's great. We just say we look forward to watching you on Football Canal very soon. If people listening want to follow you, that sounds wrong. But if they want to follow you on social media, is there anywhere where they can? Do you have any social media accounts for them?
No, social media is LinkedIn only. And if you want, Abraham Campomar, I'm there.
Excellent. Andrew and Ray, as always, a pleasure. It really is. Been great to have your company with us this evening. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as me. Ray, do you have a new account? Is it No Name Obalon? Or do you have a separate one for us?
For a couple more episodes, it's going to be Instagram Obalon Casual, if you please.
Okay. And Andrew?
Yep, the usual. Zorya Londonsk on Instagram and Twitter.
excellent. And I'm Adam at Ukrafot24 or simply Adam Pate on LinkedIn. And this has been another really enjoyable episode of the Ukrainian Football Podcast. Till next time, everybody, take care and stay safe.